Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always lit, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 74. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation, on Wild Card Weekend. Unfortunately, the Pittsburgh Steelers not involved as we are in full off-season mode right now. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Woke up to the, seeing the Andrew McCutchen news. I know it's got, is this a whole conspiracy Pittsburgh sports thing of, hey, look over here. look at this over here. And in the meanwhile, nothing happens with the, with the rest of the Pirates and the Steelers hold on to Matt Canada. And that kind of, it really feels like, I don't know, can we have one coming and one going today, Alex? I mean, we talked about it. It certainly does feel like this Friday or today is kind of that key day when it comes to Matt Canada, at least when you look back at kind of the way things have transpired, recently with offensive coordinators and all. Now, you look back at some of those things, the Bruce Arians, that was the infamous Mike Tomlin statement that Bruce Arians has decided to, quote unquote, I've got my air quotes up here, retire. And then after that, the Todd Haley announcement chose to not renew the contract. And then the Randy Feetner announcement was chose not to renew the contract. I think we have come to, at least we think we've come to the, boy, this is a long opening here. The conclusion that, Matt Canada is under contract for 2023. So talk to me, is this one big conspiracy here?
You are diving right on in. I love it. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole, Kutch thing is just for definitely the PR, but that's fine. It works for me. I mean, I'm going to go watch now some Pirates games just to go see Andrew McCutchen. But you're right. Today, maybe you can call Monday the true line in the sand type day. But my thought was initially once the season ended, as you said, based on the history of, Keith Butler, Randy Feetner, Todd Haley, when those moves were announced, it was basically 4 to 6 days after the Steelers season ended. So a Friday, kind of a news dump day into a weekend, that would make sense if Pittsburgh was going to make a move. If they were going to fire Matt Canada, today would seem like the day. And so now we sit here and we wait to see if there's any announcement or no announcement at all.
Canada watch 2023.
It's like, will that white smoke come out of
the south UPMC? Side?
Yeah, yeah. signaling a new offensive coordinator is coming. We shall see, but we don't know. I mean, I still don't know. The longer this thing drags on, and the fact that we now believe, according to ESPN, at least the Canada is under contract. I know that some of the local beat guys are still pretty confident the Canada is fired, and that's certainly possible. And I basically support the idea, but the longer that there is no news, the more likely it is that Canada will be back.
I agree. And once we get, with the contract, with us coming across the contract kind of tidbit there, I don't see, if you do the math and look back at history, and we're very, and we kind of talked about this in direct message yesterday. What we do is very kind of revolves quite a bit around trends with this team and history. And because we've been able to connect quite a few dots, you know, over the years by doing so, however, comma, you know, you got a new general manager in there in Omar Khan, obviously, you know, a new quarterback, a franchise quarterback in town. The offense, without a doubt, you know, really, really was left a lot to be desired, let's just say, especially when it comes to explosive play standpoint and other key metrics like, oh, point scoring. But within all that, I think you got to go back to the kind of the root of kind of the things that we've looked at, and that is the fact that supposedly he is under contract for 2023, and it would be very uncharacteristic of them to fire him, this offseason, even though there's enough evidence to probably do so. So I don't think everyone's in the all clear if we get through Friday, but maybe he's not hiding from the Turk as much if he gets through Friday, right?
Yeah, today, again, an important day, one we'll be watching closely overall. Speaking of coaching moves and potential coaching changes, Brian Flores appears to be a pretty busy man. He interviewed for the Cleveland Browns DC job yesterday, and according to Ian Rappaport on Friday morning, the Arizona Cardinals have requested to interview Brian Flores for their vacant head coaching job after firing Cliff Kingsbury. And so I assume that'll be granted, and Flores will go interview sometime next week. And so the doors are opening for Brian Flores. Will an offer come in? That's, of course, one, you know, big and partially separate question, but Flores certainly getting a lot of looks around the NFL.
Is this smoke and mirrors, or is he going to land a job?
I don't know. In other words, is
this to pacify the league, you know, in the Rooney role? And, we don't really hold all that stuff against him, you know,
with
what happened with the Dolphins? Or is there a legitimate interest in, you know, I would think that probably less so as a head coach right now, probably more so as a defensive coordinator this time. But obviously the Cardinals have interviewed. I mean, that's going to be the thing that comes out of this thing, right? The narrative, if he does not get a job with another team as a defensive coordinator or head coach, it's going to be, well, they just did this to pacify the league and the Rooney rule and all like that.
Probably. I think of the two right now, it is just two, Cleveland and Arizona. There could be more, but these are the things we know right now is that the Browns one seems to be more likely. The Browns have interviewed a couple different candidates, one being Jerod Mayo. It seems like he's going to stay in New England now on a long-term deal, maybe to be the eventual heir to Bill Belichick. Not quite sure there. So to me, in Cleveland, they've interviewed, there's three others. There's Sean Desai in Seattle, Jim Schwartz of Tennessee, and then Flores. It sounds like it's going to come down to Flores versus Schwartz. Nothing is set in stone. Can't say that for a fact, but that's my feeling right now. And so if he goes anywhere, it seems like the Browns DC is the most likely path for him.
Man, a lot of people are chiming in with opinions on, this would be a monumental loss for the Steelers. I don't necessarily view it that way. I mean, you obviously would like to retain him as opposed to losing him. But, I mean, where would this register on a big development for the Steelers staff should he wind up, you know, taking a job elsewhere?
It's hard to say, just not always knowing the exact influence and impact that he had. We assume that he had one in terms of obviously coaching the off-ball linebackers, putting together the game plan, and you could kind of feel maybe some of the things he brought to this defense, the 3-3-5 looks and, concepts like that. What I think with Flores is just whenever he got hired in February, you knew this was a short-term rental, potentially just 1 year. And so really, if he is gone after this year, you just recognize that was always likely to be the case. And if you could get 2 years, then you felt like you were kind of playing with house money. So, you know, if he does go, it's just kind of the expectation. And by the way, for those asking, if he becomes a DC somewhere, no, this team gets no compensation. even if he becomes head coach, this team will still not get compensation because by rule, you have to be with the organization for at least 2 years, and Flores, of course, just 1 year. So there would not be any compensation for Pittsburgh draft pick wise if even hypothetically the Arizona Cardinals hire him as their next head coach.
What would you say to the people right now who are screaming, "Ah, can't lose Flores, fire Terrell Austin and make Flores the defensive coordinator"?
I would say that's not really how this whole thing works. To be honest, Austin, you know, someone asked me who's a better DC, Flores or Austin. I really don't know, but I don't think it really matters. You know, Austin's a good DC, a good coach, not somebody you're firing just to promote Flores, who you may end up losing to a head coach job the next year, for all you know, then just, you know, would be a totally, you know, backfiring type move. So no, Flores goes, he goes. Again, whenever you hired him, you understood he was overqualified for his position as senior defensive assistant, you know, off ball linebackers coach. It's not going to be the role he has 5 years from now, you know, so you understood what it was at the time, and you're not going to go just chaotically start firing coaches just to desperately try to keep him around.
Right. Feels. Yeah. And that's my thoughts on it as well, too. It's amazing kind of some of the things some of these bloggers and whatnot will write that try to pass off as content. It feels more like placate, you know, placate. Placate to the fan base here. Real quick, didn't we talk about adjusted net yards per passing attempt in the second half of the season the other day? And I said, I'll get those stats for you.
Yeah, we did. Hit me with them.
From games 9 through 17 across the NFL, the Steelers had the second best defensive adjusted net yards for passing attempt stat in the NFL at a blistering 4.67.
Wow. And what was it, the first half of the year, just to compare?
4.67 second. It was first half.
Obviously far, far worse. Probably, you know, literally worst to first almost type situation here.
In the first 8 games, it was 7.05.
Wow.
That's quite a difference in the second half of the season. Now, obviously, TJ Watt back, right? DeMonte Casey started playing after the bye week as well, too. So I think you can, you know, definitely circle, you know, certainly highlight TJ Watt, and that's a Captain Obvious, but yeah, you know, I don't think you can downplay, you know, how, you know, the impact that DeMonte Casey had kind of, and what they were able to finally do with him during the second half of the season as well. And then, I mean, let's face it, the quality of the competition in the second half of the season versus the first half when it came to passing offenses played a part in this thing as well.
Right. It was all a combination, starting with Watt, then probably schedule, and then Casey is kind of the order I would put those three things in. But regardless, to be, you know, second best in that stat, to hold every team under 17 points or 17 fewer points for their last 7 games, I don't care who you're playing, those are pretty impressive numbers.
That really is 4.67. Believe it or not, the New Orleans Saints, 4.55 wow. In the second half of the season. Now, you can look at it and say, well, the Steelers were one of those teams that they played in the second half of the season there. And didn't New Orleans also have to play the AFC North, and I forget who else they had to play in there. Obviously, several games against their own division. So, But I found that quite impressive. Here were the top 5 teams in the second half of the season when it came to defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt. The Saints at 4.55, the Steelers at 4.67, the Chiefs 4.99, the 49ers 5.06, and the New England Patriots 5.07.
Okay, yeah, that's crazy. The Saints are still in that top spot. You wouldn't think of them as one of the top defenses in football, but
right.
But there you go. Interesting right. Numbers.
All right, circles all right. Back to where we were there. I remember we had to get back to that stat somehow.
Right. Well, your initial thought on Brian Flores, is he gone? Is he somewhere else next year?
You know what? My gut tells me he's not going to get a job.
Okay.
Or at least he's not going to get one to his liking.
He wants a head coach or bust, or do you think he just doesn't want to go to Cleveland, or
I just I think maybe all of it there. I just my when all this, you know, when we got into the off season here and his name started to circulate, I don't know. Just my gut was that he winds up remaining in Pittsburgh for another year here for whatever reason. I mean, do you really want to go to Cleveland at this point?
I mean, he interviewed for it. If he really didn't want to go, he wouldn't interview.
But wouldn't you interview? I mean, I guess that you could end up getting a kind of demerit, I guess, if you were offered a job and didn't take it, right?
If he didn't really want to, if he had no interest and desire to go, he just would have turned it down. Would be my thought, at least, and just unless he just wanted to get his name out there and kind of have that, you know, so you're not kind of in the shadows and never getting your name mentioned for interviews and that kind of angle. My thought is, you know, Arizona is probably not going to happen. It could, but I'm betting against it. Cleveland's the one I'm really watching. If he does not get hired by the Browns, then I kind of wonder what opens for him. But also I recognize that there are still many teams without a head coach right now that are going to have to put guy in place first before they put together their whole staff. So it may be where, let's say the Browns don't hire him, they make a hire of Jim Schwartz on Monday, there could be a bit of a lull, and then Flores may get some more interest as teams begin to fill their GM and head coach vacancies.
Was it Jim Schwartz in Cleveland before?
I don't remember. He's in his second stint with Tennessee right now. He's a consultant. There's some concern he's a bit older, may retire, and so they don't want. Well, he's only 56, but
I guess he was a personnel scout for them back in 93 to 95. For some reason, I had a feeling that maybe he was a defensive coordinator there for a year or something. But he was a personnel scout back in 93 to 95. He is up there. Well, I mean, no, 56. No.
Yeah. Somebody had said about retirement, but yeah, he seems pretty young.
Yeah, not 56 in retirement is age. Still, I mean, in the NFL coaching circles, that's still really fairly young, you know.
I think the thing with Flores, maybe one calculation is if you hire him as DC, does he become a head coach somewhere else next year? And you lose him after just 1 year, then you got to go find another DC. That may be one thing that may give a team some pause.
All right, so what's your gut? You think he's gone?
I think he either goes to Cleveland or he stays in Pittsburgh. That's my guess of it right now.
Okay.
Which is not really answering your question.
Right. I don't have any, you know, real reasoning behind it. It just my whole gut within this thing was, you know, I'm gonna ride this out. In other words, I don't think the best situation for potentially him is going to happen this offseason. So I my gut tells me that he stays.
Okay. Hope so. Hope you're right. Steelers adding to their offseason roster. We talked about 10 players signed to futures contracts on Monday's show or Wednesday show, whenever it was. They've added 7 more, including a couple of outsiders of the first wave that came in. 4 players who were not Steelers to end the year. That includes wide receiver Dez Fitzpatrick, defensive backs Madre Harper, Kenny Robinson, and Chris Wilcox. Fitzpatrick, probably the biggest name on the list, the former fourth round pick of the Titans. Though Robinson, a fifth round pick of the Panthers, and a really interesting story. He's a whippy old kid, Western PA native, played his college ball at West Virginia, got kicked out of West Virginia, went to the XFL even before he was NFL draft eligible, and then became eligible for the NFL draft, got drafted by the Panthers, and has, you know, played a little bit since then. So Robinson, a local kid with a pretty unique background.
I think Wilcox is another guy that's shown up in a Steelers Depot post. And well, I think we have a couple of profiles on a couple of these kids, right? Dez, there's a profile on the site for him. I think there might be one or two more profiles on a couple of these guys, but Wilcox is actually a guy that showed up in a Alex Kozora What They Look For post.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to see all that stuff come full circle.
I'm not surprised, by the way. It's gotten to the point where I immediately run to kind of look for that stuff because, you know, once again, this goes back to what we talked about at the top of the show here, right? Trends and things that we look for. And, man, you look at some of these guys that maybe don't show up on the Alex Kozora What They Look For list. You go run to look at Math Bomb and at his site and some of the RAS scores. And you think, yep, those are the kind of guys that the Steelers look for. But Wilcox, I think, only missed one box on one of those a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was just the three cone. And generally, if players miss, they kind of miss pretty heavy towards the three cone category, but he checked every other single box. And so clearly this team adding some defensive backs from outside the organization to add some depth to kind of round out the numbers for a future camp roster, but a very DB heavy focus on this batch of future contracts.
All right. And the regular center back, did you hit on them?
Yeah, the Steelers signing three more yesterday. Officially, those were guys who were on the Steelers practice squad that may have been poking around a bit and deciding to probably offers on the table. They decided to finally sign. And running back Anthony McFarland Jr., linebacker Chappelle Russell, and defensive lineman Rennell Wren. Wren played one snap this year for Pittsburgh. McFarland was a pretty key asset in that Colts victory, and Russell spent a year on the practice squad. So McFarland, the biggest name here, obviously, but Red and Russell included in that batch as well.
I saw one beat writer say, well, you know, with Benny Snell maybe gone and you know, this offseason and all like that, this will really open things up for McFarland. I don't see it. Unless there's an injury to a guy like, let's say, Jaylen Warren or Najee Harris, McFarland as your number three running back, he doesn't give you anything. It's always, you know, the big kind of and when you talk about Anthony McFarland, and is the fact that he's not an asset on special teams unless you put him back there as a kick or punt returner. So I from where I sit right now, it just feels like a, you know, kind of more of an insurance plan overall at the running mm-hmm. back position with anything with Anthony McFarland. I mean, without a doubt, I mean, there was some positive stuff in that Colts game, but it doesn't sound like people were jumping all over to get, you know, offers for futures deals so far either.
Right. Yeah. He's a pretty limited player in his value just as a runner, you know, receiver, meager value blocker, really no value special teams, very minor value overall, but an experienced guy. And, you know, if Snell does go somewhere else, it's a veteran guy in that backfield. They're going to add running backs this offseason, undrafted, maybe some really small free agent signing, who knows. But it had that veteran depth as a potential number four entering camp. That's pretty solid.
Okay.
And will the team make any more future signings? That probably feels like the list. That's, what, 17?
How many in total is that? 17? Probably a handful of stragglers here.
Okay.
Maybe outside guys. I think we could see. I mean, they've got them a rule of 51 right now, and obviously they'll probably try to build the off. You know, I mean, they got to build it to 90. You know, at some point, right?
Right. I have done the number of guys under contract right now. So maybe a couple more come in. And if they do, we'll certainly pass that along to you guys. Dave, I know
some point you'll be doing the full breakdowns on these futures guys, right?
Yeah, I'll do future report write-up, just kind of some bio, some background stuff, just to get familiar with some of these names, especially the outside guys that are not as recognizable as the guys that were on Pittsburgh's practice squad. Dave, on Wednesday, we had a good conversation about the Steelers cap space, their cap situation. You wrote a full article based off of that certainly catches some attention whenever you read about the Steelers right now, you know, technically being over the cap and in terms of the way things are structured. Just kind of walk us through that again, as you've kind of now officially laid things out. And again, people can go back on the site and read the full article that has all the breakdowns of where this money's being allocated, and importantly, where this team can and likely will create space.
Yeah, but none of this is right, right? I mean, people, it's amazing how much pushback I get on this, you know what? You can tell the people how much time I dedicate to this, right?
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
And the years that I've gone through this kind of stuff and learning it and all. And let me just lay out there that the Steelers now do have a working rule of 51, thanks to players they have under contract now, or the futures guys signed at this point. So that gives us a really, really good starting space right now. As far as my projections go, people say, well, why don't your numbers match, let's say, over the cap and all like that? Well, look, Alex Highsmith and Kevin Dotson have both qualified for proven performance escalators. Okay. That raise this offseason in the next several weeks is going to hit. Why wouldn't you start including that in your numbers. Over the cap does not yet, but I do. I want to give people as realistic as a look as there is right now. So my numbers include the increase of Alex Highsmith and Kevin Dotson. The rule of 51 that Over the Cap is working with still includes Cam Sutton and Jesse Davis in there with dead money amounts for Cam Sutton and zero cost for Jesse Davis. Why is that kind of different? Because Sutton and Davis are both going to have their contracts void in the first part of November or February here. And then they're going to be outside, you know, be treated as upcoming free agents. So I do not include either of those two players as holding a top 51 roster spot. I have Cam Sutton moved over to the dead money part right now at $2.1 million there. So that's another minor change that I have versus some of these other, cap, websites and all like that.
Can I interrupt you just really quickly? Just for clarification, as you pointed out, because some people get confused by this, when Cam Sutton's deal voids, he does not automatically become a free agent at that point. He just becomes a free agent when the new league year begins, correct?
Right. As far as I can see, there's no language in there that instantly makes him a street free agent. In other words, it's as if you're truncating his service come the end of the NFL year, which the NFL year runs until the new year starts in March. Okay. So it's not, to my understanding, he will become, like Ben last year, he will become in March, he will then become an unrestricted free agent. So there, they still could, it's not like he's available to all teams at that point.
Right. That's what I wanted to, because some people, I think, get confused about that. So I just wanted to make that part crystal clear.
Right. And that's to my, I don't actually have access to seeing the contract, but from talking to other people, that's how it's going to work with him. It's just his future years void, and it makes it that he becomes an unrestricted free agent in March at that point there.
Gotcha.
Okay. When you put all this math together and you work off of a rule of 51 prior to the three players being signed to future deals on Thursday, and I had a little math problem because I actually had initially factored in Alex Highsmith at a higher proven performance escalator rate. I was playing with my spreadsheet and I didn't back a number out and I carried it over, but it ended up making a $1 million difference in here. They are, as of yesterday morning, they were 167,618 dollars under the cap. So just under the cap as of yesterday morning. Now, The signings of these three other guys, McFarland and Russell and Wren, actually move them to the other side where they're slightly over the cap at this point. But I think another thing that I factor in is the off-season bonus placeholder that the CBA always puts in on these teams right after the season. And that number this year is going to be 849,600. So why not go ahead and account for that there? Once again, my numbers are going to look a little different than over the cap because I'm accounting for things that are definitely going to happen here in the next few weeks, with the proven performance escalator raises and the offseason bonus placeholder there. The biggest takeaway here is that the team really doesn't have any cap space right now, right? And I think that's the thing that's most blowing the people away. And they're saying, yeah, remember we had that conversation the other day, Alex, about ESPN showing you this one number. Well, a lot of these numbers people have been seeing have been with, like, I don't forget what the number was, 36 or whatever, 37, 38 players under contract for 2022. It has not been a filled out rule of 51. It has not taken into account the proven performance escalator raises, nor has it taken into the account the offseason roster bonus thing. I think people are going to quickly see here, and then and in fact, I think Over the Cap's already updated some of their future contract deals and all like that. I think people are going to say, "Oh, you know what? Dave was right all the time." And the biggest takeaway here, once again, is that the team is right around dead even of what a 2000, what an expected 225 million 2023 cap number is going to be. Now, is there, you know, that even probably surprised you, right, Alex? You know, when we had to talk the other day that the team was this close, or you know,
yeah. I mean, I hadn't thought about it too much, but you know, I was under the just. Hearing what we talked about, this team's going to be okay cap wise. I not thinking about the numbers, you know, very in depth. It did surprise me to see how up against it they were.
Once again, and here's something else that I didn't mention in all that. We kind of got the unofficial official report on Thursday that this team is expected to roll over a little more than $4.4 million in salary cap space from 2022. To 2023. And immediately I get asked, have you accounted for that? Yes, that's all. look, Alex and Matthew can tell you how anal, and I am anal on several levels here, you know, how infatuated I am with this, that I leave no stone unturned when it comes to following this. So yes, I've already accounted for the 4.4 rollover. And didn't we during, you know, midway through or the latter part of the season, we say we expect them to roll over around 4 million.
We talked about that in
salary cap space. I guess the biggest coming out of this, me laying out what we just did, is the question is, moving forward, is how concerned should people be about this right now? And I've said all along, it's not a concern here, because first and foremost, we both expect William Jackson III to either have his deal reworked all the way down to the minimum or be gone, right?
Absolutely. He's not going to play for the $12 million he's owed next year. Really, just cut him outright. Don't even try to bring him back would be my plan. But if you do bring him back, it is going to be for a heavily 90% type reduced rate. And that itself is going to clear up a big chunk of cap space.
Exactly. And if you cut him and being as how it's a nice round 750,000 at the end of that 12 million number there, 12.75 million, a rookie salary is 750,000. You do the roster displacement math. I don't even have to take my shoes off of that. It clears $12 million after roster displacement with a rookie contract in there. That $12 million would instantly get you cap compliant by more than $10 million right now at that point there. So voila, we've got you some working space for early in free agency. Now, will they be done? Will they... As Chuck Noll used to say, right? The problem isn't cutting, it's stopping. Akella Witherspoon, what are you going to do with him, Alex? I mean, there's $4 million potential when it comes to him. A lot of people are throwing out Miles Jack as a potential cap casualty and clearing $8 million in cap space before roster displacement there. Mitch Trubisky is somebody that you really have to consider what's going to happen there. There's $8 million to be saved there. Let's just let's say one of Miles Jack or Mitch Trubisky's gone, and let's say that Akella Witherspoon is gone. I mean, that's another $12 million in salary cap right there. If both Jack and Trubisky are gone and Witherspoon are gone, that's $20 million in cap space that you've managed to clear right there.
And then on top of that, you have potential restructures of TJ Watt. Who else? Minka,
and I don't think they'll need to, but Deontay Johnson is there if you need another $4.71 million I'll be surprised because of the look. I don't even want to get into projected future salary cap expenses because it apparently drives people mad, right?
Right. Yeah. I agree.
Because and we've talked about this in the past. There's lines in the sand as the offseason progresses that you have to pay attention to. Like it or not, you've got to account for the rookie pool, the 52nd, 53rd player, the practice squad, the injured reserve, and the $9 million this team wants to keep in available salary cap space to start a season. But nobody wants to acknowledge that for some reason. I don't know why. Is it because I'm the bad guy that runs into the party and pops all the balloons or what? I mean,
yeah, it's just one of those pesky things that you forget about because it's kind of it's one of the last lines in the sand that you want to account for when you get into the summer and, you know, you're really setting things up for in season. So, and it's a pretty large amount of money.
It's $21 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but no, it does not happen now, but that stuff it doesn't go away. It had that's a $21 million basically cap charge that you have to be able to afford at some point during the off season. Does it impact now free agency? No, but at some point that stuff has to be accounted for. And it just so happens that if you fully restructure Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick, that's $22 million. All right. Okay. So $22 million there covers the $21 million down the road at some point. So then it becomes how much cutting do you want to do of freeing up and is there going to be surprise releases? Is there going to be any new contracts or extensions, I should say, like a Highsmith or something like that, you know, on top of there? So don't be worried about it because there are means to clear up this money here that they'll need. They'll be able to approach free agency in a normal manner. And I think the biggest question at this point is, Alex, is who gets cut?
Yeah.
We already agree William Jackson's one of them.
I think Jackson is one. And then when you shed light on the how up against it they are right now and kind of needing to clear cap space, I would say that Trubisky probably becomes at least the second, given just his likely unhappiness being the backup, Tomlin's whole, you know, volunteers, not hostages approach, and the amount of money you could save by releasing Trubisky and then signing another veteran type quarterback for, you know, a fraction of that cost.
All right. What are you doing with Miles Jack?
Yeah, I think this one's a bit tricky. I thought he played pretty poorly down the stretch, certainly hampered by the groin injury. The guy really couldn't run, and you know, he was losing snaps at a pretty heavy clip. But given the other free agents in that inside linebacker room of Devin Bush, Marcus Allen, Robert Spillane, I wouldn't consider cutting Jack until at least I knew one of those guys would be back. I think Spillane is the most likely name to return. Bush is gone. Allen's kind of a coin flip, and he's a special teamer. It's not going to really impact your actual inside linebacker room. Mark Robinson ascending. He could have a role next year. You probably hold on to Jack into the summer, but he's not a guarantee to make the week one roster.
At the very least, he's going to make it. It feels like Jack's going to make it to the start of past the start of the new league year when you need to be cap compliant, right?
I would think so, yes.
That's where I'm at right now as well, too. And where it goes from there, we'll see. But so if indeed that's the case, it really puts the magnifying glass on Mitch Trubisky.
Right, because Witherspoon is also a little bit in that Jack conversation where you have some free agents. What happens with Cam Sutton? Do you really want to cut Witherspoon not knowing for sure if Sutton's returning?
Get him out the door.
Okay, you do. But it's also not saving you as much money either. It's a little bit of chunk of change, but it's not the $8 million of Trubisky or what, you know, Miles Jack's going to save you as well. So I'm a little less, you know, you feel like you have to do it right now. Trubisky and Jackson, to me, is probably the good starting point.
A lot of people are throwing out the name Gunnar Olszewski as a guy that should be an automatic pre-new league year cut. Let me tell you, while he could potentially be a guy that doesn't make it overall, I mean, you're talking about a $2 million base salary, and people forget the roster displacement. I mean, subtract $750,000 from that $2 million, and you get, what, $1.25 million? Is it really worth cutting him by March 15th to save $1.25 million in cap space?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could argue it both ways. He doesn't really have a role or a home right now, and every little bit of money counts, but it's not going to significantly move the needle in terms of what you may be trying to accomplish in free agency.
All right. So once again, we agreed that the biggest name to kind of watch was, Jackson, Trubisky, Jack and Witherspoon would be the highlighted guys here.
I would say so. Yes. With Jackson being a no-brainer, Trubisky, I think more likely than not, Jack, probably not, at least not right now. Witherspoon, to me, is kind of that 50-50 guy.
Okay.
But you feel like Witherspoon's more likely to be cut before the start of the new league year than not. Is that accurate?
I feel like that should be the move. Okay. And if you put me on the spot and say, do I think it will happen? Yeah, I think you get him out the door. I think they do.
I mean, it's fair. Yeah, it was a disaster of a season. I mean, there's no question about that. But just given some of the uncertainty with Cam, not tremendous cornerback depth, Pierre restricted. I mean, you can obviously retain him without much hassle if you tender him. But just not having a super strong cornerback room, I could see him sticking around. Maybe he's a post-draft cut if you drafted a corner high, something like that.
Okay.
All right. Anything else on the cap? I think you laid it out well. And it just, you know, we got some pushback on that. Obviously, people surprised by the numbers, but it's just really important to know that starting point to then really be able to understand, hey, these are the moves this team will probably have to make to clear up that cap space. How can they get to having space to have an active free agency like we expect? And that's where you really, because for me, I thought, you know, with Trubisky, before we kind of dove into these numbers the other day, I thought maybe he returns as a backup, trusted guy. But seeing these numbers, it's really hard to justify keeping him to and not clear up that cap space. It just doesn't seem to be worth it.
Do you think you can trade him in that $8 million salary by March 15th?
No, I just think it's too expensive for a guy that got benched 4 weeks into the season.
What does it feel like his value is right now? $4 million?
Actual financial. Yeah. Probably. I mean, backup quarterbacks still get paid. He's got experience. He's not, you know, he's pretty young still. Yeah, I would say $4 to $5 million.
If you went to him and said you'd mind cutting that down in half from $8 million to $4 million, what do you think he'll tell you?
I think he'll punch you in the face for benching him and then asking for a pay cut. I don't think he's going to be open to that. I think he wants out of Pittsburgh. I think he would love to just go somewhere else. He tried Pittsburgh. He basically said he regrets making this move and signing on the first day. He wants a fresh start.
I think you're correct.
All right. Anything else with the cap?
I think Dulac thinks that's going to happen too, right?
Yeah. He always puts these things in the chat. So they're never reports, but they're just, I think, his way of kind of, you know, hinting at some stuff that he believes. And so we talked about he thinks Trubisky's cut and also mentioned his team. I don't know if he said the team would have interest or if it just would make sense for this team to reunite with Josh Dobbs, but that's a thought that I'm sure will come up quite a bit this offseason.
Is Josh Dobbs sort of like these Andrew McCutchen of
a little bit, maybe a little less sentimental. I mean, he would fit. I'd be fine with that.
He's a great kid. You cannot help but root for him. You know it.
Sure. He's mobile and they're going to want to probably a mobile quarterback if Pickett would ever go down. So that kind of, you know, keeps the similar sameness of the offense. Does Dobbs want to come back to Pittsburgh? We kind of got a raw deal. I'm back in training camp in, what was it, 2021, you know, him basically getting zero training camp reps, admitted he was frustrated by it. Pittsburgh's pretty good at spurning their backup quarterbacks, and you just wonder if he would want to come back, if Tennessee will re-sign him, there's an opportunity there potentially, or he may get some looks around the NFL, but it makes sense.
I mean, there's a potential of him being the new age Charlie Batchier, if you're honest about it, another 4 years, right? 3 years or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a guy that I think can be a solid number two that's going to run your offense
very
well,
analytical,
smart, prepared. can run, the mobility is an asset. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's a very economically friendly number two type quarterback.
Yeah, I think it comes back to, like you said, I think you have to pay him a little bit more than minimum to I'm sorry.
For sure. Yeah. I just wonder if he just says, I don't want to go back to Pittsburgh. I got a raw deal there before. I mean, obviously, it'd be a different situation with Ben gone. You'd be the number two in all likelihood. But, you know, he's probably going to have some interest around the NFL. So it's not like Pittsburgh's going to be his only option, I imagine.
Would you be for that?
Yeah, I'd be for that. I mean, I haven't looked at the whole list of veteran free agents. It won't be the only name I've kind of talked about, a Mike White, potentially, maybe a Heinicke in Washington. But I think Dobbs would be just fine.
I'm with you. It wouldn't be a huge move the needle thing, but it would feel right.
Yeah, I think it would. So we'll see. I mean, he's got to, you know, we'll see if Tennessee re-signs him, what happens there, and then we'll kind of, you know, if Trubisky gets cut, take it all step by step. So speaking of free agency, Dave, you've done your work on outlining the Steelers free agents. We talked about the exclusive rights players, the restricted free agents on Wednesday's show. Now you've had articles on the unrestricted free agents, both offense and defense going up earlier today on Steelers Depot. You and I will focus on the offensive guys today in this episode, and then on Monday, we'll come back to the defensive free agents. So let's kind of run down the list of the offensive guys. It's less interesting, less consequential than the defense, but still a couple names to note, starting with tight end Zach Gentry. Draft pick of this team has grown, number two tight end, the blocking type of guy. What happens with Zach Gentry?
First and foremost, thoughts on Zach. How do you feel about Zach Gentry's 2022 season? How would you label it?
Yeah, a little disappointing. I thought his blocking wasn't as strong as it was 2 years ago. Maybe made a bit more of an impact in the pass game. Had that screen against the Bengals, caught a 21-yard pass in the finale against the Browns, but a little underwhelming.
Yeah, I'd say nondescript underwhelming. Is that like that? If that was like a steak temperature or something like that,
you get your steak as nondescript. I think you got to find some new restaurants.
Nondescript, underwhelming. I wanted more. I wanted more there. I wanted a little more. Didn't get it. But within that, he did a little something in the passing game. It's so hard to see him, even though they. To me, it feels like they could upgrade this in the draft in like a fifth round selection. It feels like they're going to want him back on maybe a 2 year modest deal. My only question about that is, man, we have seen the tight end market, you know, with the CJ Uzamas and name some of the names, Jesse James, some of the guys that have gotten deals. And if you look at the list of free agents, or at least the guys kind of scheduled to be free agents right now, unrestricted at the tight end position. I kind of characterize this, the best is Gentry, the best looking ugly girl at the high school dance. You know all about those, don't you, Alex?
Oh God, I never went to a high school dance.
Oh, you did?
Sweating right now just thinking about that.
And things usually work out okay for the best looking ugly girl at the high school dance, right?
I don't know. Yeah. You're the expert on this, apparently.
But you get where the analogy's sort of coming from there.
Sure.
I mean, he's you look at that list and you stare at it long enough, and you think, you know, Zach Gentry might not be so bad when you look at that list right now.
Yeah, I think he comes back, even with kind of the down season. They like his size. You know, Mike Tomlin's talked about the value of having that, you know, legitimate 6'7" type tight end that can block 4-3 ends when you play the Bengals or other even front teams. Although teams are becoming more multiple, even teams like the Saints that run more variety and hybrid type scheme, you know, still blocking Cam Jordan and that type of player. And to have a Freiermuth or certainly a Connor Hayward, that's not going to work too well. And so there's continuity there. He knows his role. It's established pretty well. I want to see him improve a bit and get back to where he was in 2021 as a run blocker, provided that no team comes in and, you know, really blows away with a Jesse James type offer, which I think is a little less likely because at least James, Uzama, they had more chops as a receiver. They were more involved in that aspect of it, which brought their value up. Less of the case with Zach Gentry. Bottom line is, I think, you know, a fairly reasonable deal will bring Gentry back to Pittsburgh.
I agree with you. Where I sit right now, I would be pretty surprised if he's not back on, let's say, a 2-year deal. Modest.
Now, how much is that? Like 6 million, 2-year, 6 million type contract.
I have $4.5 million per in my head.
Oh, wow. So 2 years, 9 million.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, maybe I'm undershooting it just given the cap going up in the market. I mean, I'm probably a bit under on that.
Oh, what'd you have? 2 years, 6 million?
Yeah. I'm just spitballing ideas, giving it not much thought.
Okay. I'm thinking it should be somewhere around what we just, for some reason, I have 2 years, like 9 million in my head.
I mean, I could be right. I typically kind of undershoot some of these things, and he's still a pretty young guy. So not breaking the bank either way. All right, fullback.
Derek Watts, yeah. Next one on this list. And like it or not, Alex, even though people like to frame that $4 million or whatever cap hit that he had, that wasn't his doing, folks. That was the Steelers restructuring the contract that resulted in that. He earned $2.75 million in 2022, and maybe you can make an argument that was three-quarters of a million too much, maybe when it comes to him, but the fact of the matter is it wasn't like, at least to me, he once again, maybe three-quarters of a million too high, but that's it. I mean, he didn't knock the socks off, but he did, I think, have more touches than he's had in his NFL career in a single season. He's still you'd like to have seen him make more of an impact on special teams, I think, overall. But, you know, they were able to get him on the field a little bit. And, you know, I guess the biggest question is will he, you know, tip his hat and retire with his older brother, JJ, here?
Yeah, I don't know what's in his head. I don't really get the sense he's looking to retire right now, probably play as long as the NFL will let him. He didn't make the money that JJ did that kind of allows that maybe earlier than expected type retirement. Hasn't had the injuries that JJ has had as well. This one's a little hard to read. I think obviously before the season, you figured this guy's, you know, pretty much gone. Now, could you bring him back on a one-year deal that's pretty cheap that offers essentially no guarantee he'll be on the 53-man roster? I think that's possible. You know, what happens to Matt Canada? If Canada stays, does that increase the odds of Watt returning as well, given maybe they found some ways to use him in the third and short, you know, run game this year, some goal line packages? That's possible. But if he does return, it's going to be, you know, a one-year deal that should be pretty cheap.
Yeah, and even if you had to do a two-year deal with, you know, to make the money look better, you'd only, I think you'd do so with the idea that he's probably only going to play 1 year. So I think in totality, the most I want to see him get in cash, I think is $2.5 million this offseason. Now that 2.5 would be base salary and signing bonus combined if there's a multi-year deal. If it's a one-year deal, I don't think they would go that route. I think you're more looking at a number under 2 million there, but I think there is a decent, people are not probably not going to want to hear this, but I think there's a decent chance that he's back.
Yeah, it can really go either way, and I'm not going to be too upset if he goes or if he stays. I mean, there is special teams value, you know, four-phase guy. He did get more involved in the offense this year, although I think that role offensively is, you know, you could replace that relatively easily, but I'll say the odds have gone up since where they were before the season. But again, I can really take it or leave it with Derek Watt.
Mason Rudolph.
He's gone. That's a short conversation. He gone.
If Mason Rudolph was a racehorse, he would be out of the gate quicker than any other. We'd be talking about, you know, Mason's quick out of the gate. He's going to be super quick out of the unrestricted free agent gate, not looking back. It's going to be like the Forrest Gump gif of him running away. I don't expect him back, and you obviously don't either. So that's a short conversation. I love me some Miles Boykin, Alex, and I think you do as well, too.
I do. Yeah, that's one guy that one of those sneaky free agents that's easy to forget about, being claimed off waivers last summer, only playing, you know, I don't know, 50 or so offensive snaps this year. I think seeing two targets the entire year, and one was in that week one game when that deep
three,
ball,
three targets, three targets, two catches.
All right, there you go. But being a really core and valuable special teamer as a gunner, to me, he's one of the best gunners in football this year. Being able to beat vices and stay clean, make an impact there. I forget exactly how many tackles he had, but just the impact he had on special teams was important. So knocking off a lot as a receiver. He did work late in the season in that heavy, you know, one receiver sets as a run blocker and had mild success there. So there's a bit of, you know, heavy personnel run blocking to him. But as a special teamer, he's worth bringing back.
10 total special teams tackles in 2022. 9 of those were the primary variety, where he was termed the primary tackler those situations. And he led the team in the primary special team tackles category, not the overall total tackles. But to me, it feels like a guy that, man, if you can get him back on a veteran minimum contract with the max allocated signing bonus for that, I think you try to do that. I mean, can you get him back on it? Would it take a 2-year deal to get him back? I'm not so sure about that. I mean, there's not much. I think he's back. Plain and simple, I think he's back on a cheap deal.
I think so too. I know that he would love to be more as a receiver, but he's kind of found a role in the niche in Pittsburgh, Baltimore. You know, he was a special teamer in Baltimore. He was a receiver early in his career, fell out of favor, but I think he just likes playing in Pittsburgh, if I had to guess. So I think he returns as well.
Here's a tough one. Benny Snell football.
It's kind of similar to Boykin, I guess, in terms of that, you know, not so much the position they play, but it is that special teams value. I've always appreciated and respected Snell for buying in to special teams after being, you know, literally one of the best runners in SEC history ever. But yeah, with Snell, I'd like to have him back, but it's all about price and whether he wants to come back. But if he can be on a Boykin type deal for a year or 2 years, you know, for really cheap, then I'm all for that.
He likes Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin likes him, but they're not going to like him on the payroll sheet, especially if maybe is there a team out there that's going to have cap space that says here's $2.5 million as part of maybe a two-year deal up, you know, in $2.5 million in cash in 2023 for you to be you know, at best our second or backup or at worst our third string special teams ace kind of guy. Is there a team that might be willing to pay him a little bit more than the Steelers would be this offseason?
I mean, you can never rule it out. That happened to, you know, Ray McCloud last year, where the 49ers gave him a good offer, different, you know, return man, different role, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think Pittsburgh would probably value him higher than most other teams, just being around him the most and knowing the real nitty gritty of his value. Guy's only 24 still, so he's still pretty young. I'd bring him back, and then your running back room is essentially set with Harris, Warren, Snell, McFarland, number 4, bringing an undrafted guy that you love so much. Your running back room don't have to touch it the rest of the way.
Gut feeling is he's back.
Yes.
Mine as well. Trent Scott.
Trent Scott, the Pat Meyer favorite, followed him around his whole career. 6 offensive linemen this year, played 1 snap at a right tackle and a core 4 left for literally just 1 play this season. If he comes back, it is truly veteran minimum type deal. Take it, leave it. His actual play was fine, I guess. There really isn't a lot to note.
Right. And outside of playing the one snap at tackle, the other 30 snaps were as a tackle eligible, more goal line, short yardage situation. Kind of, I mean, it didn't stick out as ugly, but those snaps were what they were. If I'm fine with bringing him back, just it's got to be a minimum salary deal where you can cut him.
And you could say the same about Jesse Davis, acquired from Minnesota. Now that's a guy.
I think there's more meat on the bone there than you do.
I'd let him go just because I want to find a better, more quality, maybe swing guy. You could argue that because his team traded for him, this would be more incentive to keep him around for at least 1 year. I think this team has to add better, more quality offensive line depth, and I just don't want to get complacent by running it back with the same guys as last year.
I use him as a break glass in case of emergency offseason re-signing kind of deal, meaning that God forbid if I draft a kid and he gets hurt or what have you, I can turn to this guy as an experienced depth guy overall. I once again don't sign him for more than I sign him for the minimum. I signed him to a veteran benefit contract with the max amount of signing bonus, which, well, I don't know what it is, 160,000, whatever it is, in 2023. That's the way I sign him. That way, if I need to cut him, just like Trent Scott. But I think there's some meat on the bone that's worth keeping around this offseason.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, obviously, re-signing Jesse Davis or not will not make or break the Steelers offseason. So, I mean, it can go either way. If you re-sign him, you certainly can still bring in another veteran free agent for a more substantial contract if you wanted to. So it's not going to keep me up at night. But would I personally re-sign him? No, I'd let him go.
All right. So do you think that they'll let him go?
It could go either way. What do we base it off of? Very little. Guy didn't play a single snap this year offensively. I'll say no, but.
I'll say yes. What's your thoughts on Trent Scott?
I'll say yes, just because he's the Pat Meyer guy.
I'll say yes. I'll say yes on both of these guys on minimum salary deals. Anthony Miller, we're probably going to agree on this one too.
Yeah, probably not. Just that shoulder injury seemed pretty nasty last year. You know, he's played in Pittsburgh. Well, he didn't play this past year, but was in Pittsburgh the year before, caught one pass. I think you just let that guy go.
I think you just send him on his way as well, too. You gave it a chance. It didn't work out. He's not going to really give you anything on special teams, I don't think. I mean, even though he did kind of return, you know, returned some. I mean, he's primarily a slot guy. I mean, he can play the X in the slot. So I think there is some experience value there. But I mean, here's the thing. If you bring him back, it's got to be a veteran benefit contract with him. It's not going to move the needle. It's going to be one of those things that, I mean, look, I tell you what he did. What impressed me the most is that guy looked jacked up during the OTA programs and the beginning of training camp and all. I mean, he looked like in fantastic physical condition. But I mean, we didn't get to see anything more than that. So I just think you let that guy go on his way.
Yeah, same again. Doesn't move the needle too much either way, but I would expect him to not be brought back.
All right.
So really, in terms of the big names here to watch for, it's Zach Gentry. When that's your biggest name, it's a pretty quiet offseason on that side of the football. Watt, Boykin, and Snell are really the only names that offer any level of intrigue, assuming, and very safely so, that Rudolph is 100% gone.
Right.
It really comes down to, like, will they keep Trubisky as one of your biggest offensive offseason questions? Will they address it? It's all more non-free agency related things in the sense of Trubisky. Do they address offensive line? If so, how? Do they address receiver? Those type of things are more interesting than really their free agency list.
Yeah, what do you do at the slot, yo? Do you address the slot position in the draft, maybe? You know, I think there's a strong possibility of that. What's going to happen with Gentry? And
does the offensive line, do they run it back, or do they want to make an upgrade at left guard?
I think you've got to draft at least one or two of those positions. It's just a matter of where.
Yeah, but are you drafting for somebody to compete and start day one, or is it purely depth?
I think if something's there in those first three rounds, that either at really any of the positions, probably more so guard than tackle. I don't turn my nose up at the idea of that. I think you will see the offensive line addressed within the first three or four rounds of the draft, and possibly even two offensive linemen in the draft in a whole. They have got to make they've got to make the depth of this offensive line better.
They do. Yeah, because they can't expect this team to be as incredibly healthy as it was this year. That's almost certainly not going to happen again. Let me rephrase the question. Will the starting five of 2022 be the starting five in week one of 2023?
Yes.
You think?
Yes. Okay. I think it will be.
It's been trending that way. Dotson's the one I've still been mixed on. He did play certainly better the back half of the year. He's just such a frustrating player that I really can't trust. That's a hard guy to sit there and allow to be the starter throughout this whole process.
Now you were specific in week one in that. Now, does that mean you can't draft a guy and then, you know, he ends up, you know, by week three being the starter? I think that's a possibility. But as I sit here right now today, yeah, I have this feeling, and a lot of people, You're asking what I think the team will do, right?
Right. Yes. What do you think will actually happen?
Okay. That's what I think will happen. It'll be the same five that ended 2022 as your week one 2023 starting five, barring injury, of course.
Yeah, I'm maybe a little less confident than you, but I've certainly been thinking about it being more and more likely, just given the continuity, certainly the growth and development. And from Pittsburgh's standpoint, do they want to sit there and say the group has gotten better? They played, you know, certainly solid football by the end of the season. Do we want to risk messing with that and let just kind of leave it as it is? You can certainly make that argument. To me, center, right guard, right tackle, not changing, left tackle. I'm higher on Dan Moore than most people. Left guard's the one I still sit there and go, if I could really get an opportunity on day two, one of those second round picks, to find a left guard to be more of that guy that I can trust, to be more consistent, better above the neck, I would certainly look into that. I think round two is kind of a sweet spot for guards, just generally speaking. I would look at that. But again, Dotson, to his credit, did play better the last, I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks of the season.
Okay, write all that down just in case I'm right.
All right, there you go. Anything else there? I think that's, we'll cover defense on Monday. That list more consequential, more expensive, more interesting to discuss and debate. But the offense, certainly a couple of names we wanted to address there. So good job on you to really break this down so well for people to get a good offseason feel of what to expect and what guys are pending free agents.
Yeah, and I have now completed all my primers. My half of my off-season work is now done. It takes me a while to pound all that stuff out there. But the defensive, the one with the 10 defensive players went up today, unrestricted, and within that post, the link are links to the four in the series there. So you can get caught up real quick, and they're pretty extensive reads, right?
Yeah, but they're informative and they're really good, like you said, primer to get you ready for March. All right, Dave, anything else you want to talk about? If not, we can start getting ready for wildcard weekend.
Which way? You want to go to the email machine or do you want to go to our picks, my bookie, or what?
Yeah, let's we'll make our picks here in a moment. Let's hear from our friends over at my bookie and then tackle wildcard weekend.
All right, it's a new year, new you, so give yourself a fresh start with MyBookie. Whether you bet to earn or to make the games more exciting, MyBookie gives you the most for your money with their redesigned deposit bonus. Just use promo code TERRIBLE, that's promo code TERRIBLE, on a deposit of $50 or more to receive a cash bonus instantly to your MyBookie account. Using this bonus is quite simple, really. Bet your deposit amount just once and you're ready to cash out. It's no strings attached with MyBookie. Bet on the NFL, UFC, or play for a share of big cash prizes in the weekly online blackjack tournaments they have. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and win, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. The new deposit bonus is a 10% cash bonus on any first-time deposit bonus up to $2,000. The minimum deposit amount is $50, and the maximum bonus amount is $200. This bonus only has a one-time playthrough amount, which means that the bonus doesn't lock you in, which is a major pain point for online gamblers. Focus on the cash-in, cash-out aspect of this bonus and not the percentage amount. Once again, use promo code TERRIBLE at MyBookie to take advantage of this new promo that they're doing on a new deposit bonus here.
All right. And we thank our friends over at MyBookie. Just one quick note, and it really kind of demonstrates how much we're scraping the bottom of the barrel when it comes to news from The Athletic. Matt Canada was at the Steelers facility today. So the news of the day is man goes to work. So apparently that is a worth tweeting out, but that is the news, which is, of course, is really just no news.
What was the meme or something, or the clip from like ESPN or something that you had the other day that was funny that you posted, because it's not really news, but someone made it news. What was that?
Whenever you start these things with what is that meme, I have to really start the hunt to try to figure out.
It was a screenshot or something of something framed as news that really wasn't news or something. Was it CNN or something? I forget.
The joke about the breaking Titanic sunk 100 years ago. Yeah. That was in our DMs. Yeah, that was one of my favorite Chirons ever.
What'd you call it?
They're called a Chiron. That's the graphic that shows up on the screen. That's the TV production word for
Chiron. Oh, okay. You're using these fancy words that, you used in
That's a Clarion public school education for you.
Chiron. Can you use it in a sentence?
The language of origin. Yeah. Chiron, I think.
Chiron. Okay. All right. I did not know that. Yeah.
Sorry to bring down we're all joking and then I got all serious for a second.
I know. Yeah. Bring down. This is your way of talking down to me, isn't it?
Just me being a nerd and just why.
Yeah. You're just trying to talk down on my education or lack thereof is what it is.
Let's make our wild card weekend picks, Dave.
All right. Seattle Seahawks. I'm really excited just to sit back and watch some football this week. With the Steelers out of it here. Seahawks on the road against the 49ers. Ooh, 49ers at home laying 9.5 against the Seahawks.
Yeah, big line, but that 49ers defense. Man, Brock Purdy, what a job he's done at quarterback. I know that system has been friendly to him and it's, you know, got a good defense and in a run game, but I don't care, man. 7th round pick, really playing well. Going with the 49ers.
I think the 49ers win this. I think that that extra half point there, I think it's going to come in handy for me, Alex. Give me the Seahawks +9.5 on the road against the 49ers. How about this one? This one should be a decent one. The Chargers go on the road and play the AFC South champion Jacksonville Jaguars. The Chargers are 2.5-point road favorites in this one.
You know, it was so interesting to see the Chargers play their guys in week 18. Mike Williams gets hurt, hasn't practiced all week, sat us up in the air. You know, for as much as we talked about the turnaround that Pittsburgh had, Jacksonville had the same exact turnaround. And of course, they got into the playoffs. So what a credit to Doug Peterson and that group. I'm going Jacksonville. I think they'd be they can upset this Chargers team with Trevor Lawrence, with the way this offense is, just the way this team is trended. They have confidence, you know, winning and clinching the South in week 18. Give me the Jags.
Yeah, I think this is where Vegas is taking advantage of people's look at the cute Jaguars and the cute puppy syndrome here. Yeah. This is a trap, Alex. A field goal. This is a field goal game. The Chargers come out top on top with that by 3 points here. So I'm taking the Chargers laying the 2.5 points. It's a
really
trap.
Quick. You saying that just jogged my memory. Talk about Adrian McCutcheon. They're definitely just signed McCutcheon because they're going to trade Brian Reynolds in like 2 days. So this is definitely the get you happy about McCutcheon as they send Reynolds to the Yankees or Rangers or wherever.
Yeah, I think you're right. Shiny little new toy here. Look at this tinsel over here.
This is definitely like the happy meal before your parents get divorced. Like this is the scenario the Pirates are running right now. 100%.
Miami Dolphins on the road against the Buffalo Bills. Bills laying 13.5 against the Dolphins here.
Yeah, the Dolphins, I know that McDaniel said the other day they're proceeding with the assumption that Skylar Thompson will start, Tua will not play. Teddy still could, but it sounds like it's going to be Thompson against this Bills team. You know, just it's going to be Buffalo by how much is the question. I'm still going to go with the Bills to cover that.
Yeah, this feels like a take you out behind the barn and give it to you pretty good here. I'm laying the 13.5 with you here. New York Football Giants on the road against the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings are laying 3 points against the G-Man here.
Could this be upset alert as well? Wildcard weekend's usually pretty wild, as the name implies. You know, I don't know what the reason is, but something about just the job Brian Daboll has done. I'm going to go with the Giants in this one. It's just that weird random upset.
Man, it's going to be so – that's got to be one of the loudest places to play, right? I mean, at least based on what the feeling I get on TV, it feels like that place gets loud. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to – I think all that energy is going to make a difference in this game. Give me the Vikings, and I'll lay the 3 points in this one. The Ravens on the road against the Bengals. Back-to-back weeks these two teams play. Back-to-back weeks, there's not going to be – well, it's been multiple weeks now, but no Lamar Jackson in this one. The Bengals, 9.5-point home favorites. The disrespected Bengals because of the way they were treated, you know, with the whole, you know, home field advantage thing, yada yada. 9.5 points at home favored against the Ravens.
Yeah, again, this kind of feels like Bengals will win, but by how much? The Ravens defense is still stout, and you have to give them credit. That secondary can match up against all the Bengals skill guys. But, you know, if it's Tyler Huntley versus Joe Burrow, give me Cincinnati. As we talked about, this is a bit down the road, but what happens with Lamar? What do you do with Jackson, to me, is the number one question and the most difficult question any team has to face this offseason.
Boy, I'd be careful with that. And, he, you know, franchise tagging him is just going to piss him off more.
But here's the dilemma that you want to, do you invest the money in him long term, given the injury history, but you also see how valuable he is to your franchise, because the second he doesn't play, your offense just totally tanks.
I don't sign him to that big deal. I just don't. I can't.
What do you do with him?
I tag and trade him if I can.
That seems like that idea has gotten momentum lately. That might be the path that the Baltimore's on. But then, of course, what does Baltimore do? Where does he go? What do they get? All big, important question.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. And we've talked about this being a big decision that the Ravens are going to have for a while here. I can't do it. I can't give them that money.
That's fair.
Bengals -9.5.
All right. There you go.
What are you doing?
I'm going Bengals. Yeah, I'm going.
Okay.
Bengals.
Okay. I'm going. The only way they don't do this is if week one Joe Burrow shows up.
The interceptions and the offensive line issues. Yeah. Right. Fair point.
Dallas Cowboys on the road against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Believe it or not, Cowboys only favored by 2.5 in this one.
You know, I really wrestle with this one. On paper, the Cowboys are the better team, more explosive offense. The Buccaneers have had so many issues this year, but. You know, just thinking about this thing, macro level, big picture, it's Tom Brady, the best playoff player in essentially, you know, sports history. It's like him and Michael Jordan versus the Cowboys, who just seem to find a way to give the game away every single time they get into the postseason. So on paper, I think the Cowboys are the better team, but they just kind of find a way to screw things up. That's been their MO for the last 20 years in the postseason. So do you bet against Tom Brady in the playoffs? I'm not. I'm going to go with Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd go the Dallas Cowboys way, because just what you laid out is exactly kind of my thoughts. It's Tom freaking Brady here we're talking about. And yeah, I know he hadn't been great and yada yada, but I think just defensively they'll have kind of a game plan to try to keep the score down in this one and don't give that damn ball back to Tom late in the game. That's all I got to say here. I want to go different from you, but this is one that I have circled as an upset here. Give me the Buccaneers +2.5 points at home against the Cowboys.
Do we disagree on any picks? Are we different?
We disagreed on the first one, the Seahawks and the 49ers. I had the Seahawks covering. Okay. I had the Chargers covering the 2.5 points. Okay. And we differed on the Vikings and Giants as well, too.
Oh, you did take Minnesota. Right. Okay, my bad. Okay, right. Gotcha. All right,
we've got three different games here.
All right, it's going to be a good weekend. What game are you most looking forward to, just from an entertainment standpoint, putting aside the odds and anything like that? What do you think will be just the best game of the weekend?
I think it'll be the Chargers and Jaguars.
I think so, too. I think that's going to be a really close game.
And I think the second one that we might end up talking about is, boy, what about that Giants-Vikings game?
Yeah, I mean, Dable's going to be coach of the year. I know some people have said, you know, could Tomlin have gotten it? Doug Peterson probably could get it in Jacksonville, too. But I think Dable's going to get the award this year.
All right, got those knocked out here.
All right, let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
Okay, the email machine we go. Sort them real quick, and we'll start with Chris Warren writes in, free agency. Can you give us a sense of how difficult it might be to extend Deontay Johnson while re-signing Sutton, Edmonds, and Kazee? First and foremost there, why are you going to extend Deontay Johnson? You just gave him Deontay Johnson the extension last year. So, there's no reason, and they probably shouldn't extend Deontay Johnson. Re-signing Sutton will be the hardest thing, I think, of the lot there. Edmonds and Kazee, allow, if you will, Chris, I just wrote up the Alex, I just talked about the offensive restricted free agents. I just wrote up the defensive restricted free agents this morning. We will be discussing those at length on the Monday show here, barring nothing going crazy here. So let us table that until Monday. But you know, to the root of this, that they're not going to extend Deontay Johnson. He says he goes on to say, I say go get a starting caliber defensive tackle in the first two rounds. He says I think Larry O will be more expensive than expected. He'll get a 2 to 3 year deal worth $8 million. Thanks as always. Can't wait for the tremendous draft coverage. Thanks for the email, Chris. We'll hit most of that when we go over the defensive restricted free agents on Monday. Jordan Pearsall writes in, hello, Dave and Alex. I'm Jordan from Central Pennsylvania, the best Steelers podcast, and it's not even close. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you.
In my group chat, one of my friends said we have the most delusional fan base in the NFL. Half of your fan base wants Tomlin gone because y'all missed the playoffs. Both of your quarterbacks finished with more interceptions than TDs on the season. The fact that this man got y'all to a winning record, I don't even know was possible. He says, so my question for you two is, do you know if there's another head coach in the last 30 years that have had two quarterbacks that started at least five games, both finished the season with more interceptions than touchdowns, and the coach still finished with a winning record? That's a great question, Jordan. I don't know if Alex can plug it into the machine quick enough.
Probably not.
To get an answer there for you, but that is a really good thought out question, Jordan.
It is. I imagine it's a very short list if it's ever happened before. So he's asking starting at least five games.
He says, do you know if there's another head coach in the last 30 years that have had two quarterbacks that started at least five games each and both finished the season with more interceptions than touchdowns? I mean, it's a fairly drilled down. I'm going to say that the parameters alone are going to be impossible to match.
Circumstances. There's probably been a couple examples of that happening. I doubt those teams
with a winning record though. Right. Yeah. Right. So, interesting way he framed the question. Maybe Alex can look that up if he gets bored here in the next. Although now that I put it out there, Alex will as soon as
I'm already looking, but this is going to take it would take a lot of time to do. So I cannot answer that right now, unfortunately.
Right. All right, let's go to the next one. Lee Greenspan writes in. First off, and I just hear Alex saying, I got to find out.
I'm looking up the 2012 Arizona Cardinals. My first thought went to John Skelton, and. In 2012, the Cardinals went 5-11, so the losing record. Kevin Kolb started five games. He threw more touchdowns than picks. Skelton started six games, had two touchdowns, nine picks. Ryan Lindley started four games, threw no touchdowns, seven picks. So that's kind of ish the example. And they went 5-11. So just as one reference, a similar situation, a quarterback roulette, and the Cardinals were terrible that year under former Steelers OC Ken Wisenhunt.
Oh, there you go. Lee Greenspan writes in, first of all, thank you both for another great season. Really great content put out consistently from the Steelers Depot crew. Thank you, Lee. He says, I have two questions as we move into the offseason. What's your level of concern with Boswell going into next season? He says, we are paying him top kicker dollars, and no doubt we need a better season from him. And second, on Monday's podcast, your key unrestricted free agents to keep didn't mention Larry Ogunjobi. He says, was this an oversight? Do you think his age play will drop, blah, 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 blah. The second part of your question, Lee, is we kind of answered that. We did the unrestricteds in offensive and defensive categories there. So, and I think in the previous shows, all we did was we talked about the restricted and the exclusive rights guys. So bear with us, Lee, until Monday. We just hit the offensive unrestricted guys today. Recap, we promise we will hit the 11 unrestricted free agents, of which Larry Ogunjobi is one of, on the Monday show. So there's, you know, stay patient on that. Alex, you're concerned about Boswell.
I really don't have any. This happened in 2018. There was frankly more reason for concern back then. He nearly got cut midseason. Had the injury. I think he talked to some reporters and said, you know, the injury wasn't a factor. The missed time was. That's all one and the same to me. So, you know, I think Boz has bounced back before. He'll bounce back again.
I'm not concerned about it until I have a reason in 2023 to be concerned about it. For all the reasons that you mentioned. He bounced back before, and I was worried about him that last time. Remember, I was the I was the one sending up the, oh my God, kickers are weird people flag up there, but he ended up correcting that. So because of that, I got to give him the benefit of the doubt that he'll get it straight this next time.
I mean, even if you had doubt, like, what do? You sign a kicker? Do you go trap him? You're not going to do that. You're going to roll with boss until, you know, until otherwise.
Roger Johnstone writes in the interest of putting the 2022 Steelers and Mike Tomlin's performance in context and to compare apples to apples, how does the 2022 Steelers 9-8 record compare with the other teams in recent years starting rookie quarterbacks? To dial it down even further, how about teams starting rookies in year one following the retirement departure of a franchise quarterback? Oh Lord, he's going to send us down another rabbit hole there. Any initial thoughts of kind of way he laid that out? I mean, I haven't looked.
Messy question. I mean, it's everything trying to compare that. I understand you're trying to do apples to apples, but I mean, different situations. When did that rookie start? What were the pieces around it? Was it a new coaching staff? Usually that happens with rookie quarterbacks. Again, I've always compared this 2022 team to where the Patriots were at in 2020, I guess it would have been the first year post Tom Brady, whatever year that was, where they went, 7-9. They didn't have a rookie quarterback right away. It was Cam Newton, but that veteran bridge guy to start was kind of their Mitch Trubisky. They get Mac Jones the next year. That's kind of where I view Pittsburgh being on that similar path. And so I don't really have any conclusions or takeaways to comparing this year versus the success or failures of other teams in semi-similar situations. All I really focus on is just where this team is at, where they need to go to compete and win a playoff game.
Number two part of this question. Do you think Connor Hayward could possibly take up Derek Watt's limited snaps at fullback and also provide core special teams work at a cheaper price and then find a bigger, better blocking third tight end there? First and foremost, Connor's already a core special teamer. So you're not going to, he's not going to absorb Derek Watt's, both those guys are core special teamers. So you're not going to absorb special team snaps there. The question becomes, can he absorb Watt's limited fullback snaps? And I think that's yet to be determined. There's nothing from what we've seen that he yet that would give us great comfort that he could be a lead fullback or do the Watt role.
How often does Watt really lead block? You know, a little bit, but he actually touched the ball quite a bit this year. So, you know, you could probably make it work. Hayward's not that lead blocker type like a Rosie Nix, and I guess what Watt has done in very limited situations. But there's a way you could probably make it work if Watt wasn't around to expand Hayward's role a bit as that H-back off-ball tight end, some of the boot stuff they do, throw it to the flat. That would make sense for Hayward. So they're not one-to-one. They're different skill sets. There's probably a way to make it work, though.
Sure. And as we just talked about, Watt, I mean, it's not unthinkable that he's not back, and it wouldn't be the end of the world. But it will be interesting to see if Hayward is used more in the kind of a backfield role as things get going during the offseason there. He says he's been listening and reading to the sites for several years now. He says, we really appreciate your work, although you are pushing it a few times lately with the on-air research. Let me tell you why that's what we do, Roger, because if Alex and I were just talking in general to each other on a call, we would be going, well, let me look that up. You know,
that's what we have done before.
And we have done that in the past with just conversations with each other. And we want to try, and we've always wanted to try to keep this podcast with just two guys excited to talk to each other about football with the rest, with, you know, 20,000 of you listening in, you know. And do we kind of go a little bit overboard at times? Yeah. But I don't think we're going to change who we are in that aspect of it. Right, Alex?
Yeah. I mean, it's a fair critique. We probably can be a bit better. We don't want dead air and that type of stuff, but we just hate having the unanswered questions for ourselves. And I think for the
and
listeners.
For the listeners. You know, right.
Yeah. So I think,
because we don't know if we're going to be able to circle back to them with the ant, you know, we'll forget or something. So,
right. Or like 1800 other stories come up with the new cycle work. So, yeah, I mean, point well taken. We'll try to tighten it up a bit, but it just kind of baked into, I think, Dave and our DNA.
Michael Moore's got a long one here. I think first and foremost, he says, let's just answer the first part of it. Every episode is good, but particularly enjoyed the discussion on Wednesday's show. The discussion of the adjusted net yards per passing attempt highlighted something we obviously already knew, which is this offense needs some improvement big time. He says his question in short is, how do you even do that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question one more time?
He says the discussion we had about the adjusted net yards per passing attempt highlighted something we obviously already knew. This offense needs some improvement big time. He says, question is short. How do you even do that? How do you improve the offense big time? And that's a hugely loaded question.
Big plays.
It's got to be explosive plays. It's got to be switch routes. It's got to be. I mean, that's an extremely loaded question here. It's got to be, it's got to be your quarterback willing to push the football down the field. It's got to be, can your running game produce more explosive plays? I doubt that it can. It's a great question that they're going to have to answer to sit here and draw it out. I mean, it's kind of impossible to do that. I mean, how do you even do that? They're going to have to find a way to do it. And it's going to have to come, like I said, we got to see more explosive plays, period.
Yeah, 100%. I'm trying to pull up the teams that had the most explosive plays this year. Stathead's being a little slow, but I imagine the teams that had the most explosive big plays also led in that adjusted net yards per passing attempt category. So I'm sure there's a pretty clear correlation there. So now how do you do that? As Dave said, variety of ways to do that, personnel, scheme, the return of Calvin Austin potentially could offer that, among other things, including the growth of this offense, the growth of Kenny Pickett, George Pickens, et cetera. So some of that's natural and you just kind of expect that to happen as this young offense, gets through its growing pains and really hits the ground running in year number two for Kenny Pickett for this offense. But in big picture, how do you improve that number? It is two big plays.
All right. Dustin Horst has that's a new name. Great job this season. Thank you for the best Steelers coverage. Question, seeing as Matt Canada leaves a lot to be desired from the OC position, can you pinpoint why we should be excited about Pickett? He says, I want Kenny to succeed, but how can we get an accurate read on him with a poor OC?
By the way, Jadeveon Clowney is blaming the media for his words being taken out of context for his comments about Myles Garrett. So not that it matters too much to anything or anybody. How does Pickett improve? I mean, there's validity to the question, but if Kenny Pickett truly is the franchise guy that Pittsburgh drafted him to be, then you can probably overcome those things. And certainly Pickett progressed and, showed improvement down the stretch despite having Canada as his OC. So it's not where you're destined to suck and never going to improve, even if Canada is not the Andy Reid of our generation.
He wants Kenny to succeed, but how do we get an accurate read on him with a poor OC? I think the accurate read is seeing him make some of these plays out of structure this year. Right. I think the accuracy is a nut that which we kind of already knew coming out of college, but he confirmed he could have the accuracy at the NFL level. Just the general, I think the awareness at the line of scrimmage and the appearance of him seeming like he knows what he's looking at across the line of scrimmage. The ice in the veins, the ability to, even games that top to bottom in the first 56 minutes of action weren't great, but the final three or four were, right. I think that's where we at least take some comfort, and I be careful at how I'm phrasing this, some comfort on getting an accurate read of his play to date, and with the idea that hopefully in the next six games we'll be able to see him build off of that. I think that's how you get the accurate read of just what I laid out right there.
I think you're 100% right, and I understand there's a trickiness and difficulty to it, and you could say the OC is going to hamper a bad OC is going to hamper a quarterback to an extent, but I also don't want to sit there and say that we can't judge Pickett just because of Canada, which essentially puts the blame on Canada for everything that Pickett would ever do wrong in the future. There's still ways to evaluate, still ways to judge it. And while, of course, the OC is very critical, I think it's worth noting this team has a pretty good quarterbacks coach in Mike Sullivan, who works closer with Pickett than anybody else. Now, again, he doesn't call the plays. That's Canada's job, obviously. But that's another important component. And I believe that Pittsburgh has a pretty good guy working with Kenny Pickett on a daily basis.
Troy Papalomatis writes in, Dave, you look at that originally, I think it says Troy Polamalu.
Big fan of the show.
Dave and Alex writes in, knowing the Steelers historically do not make big splashes in free agency, what is the number one position group this team should address in free agency? He says, obviously adding depth in the trenches needs to be at the top of the top priority, but do you look to make a big move for a corner or inside linebacker? Thanks for the best coverage out there. So what is the number one position group this team should address in free agency?
Well, we've talked about how I think D-line's the biggest area of need for this team right now. If you made me choose one, but does that mean it has to be addressed or should be addressed in free agency? It just depends on what's out there, the player, the scheme fit, the age, the contract, all of those variables. So it's hard to really sit there and say we need to address X in free agency just because you never quite know what the pool of players going to be in all the circumstances. So when people ask this kind of stuff or what position should they draft in the first round, everything's so interlinked based on free agency and draft. They're really not separate entities in terms of how you evaluate roster building and improving your team. So again, D-line is the biggest need right now across the board, but you don't have to guarantee that that has to be addressed and fixed in free agency.
I mean, if you can go get a Javon Hargrave, go freaking get him if that's going to be your splash, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could be. Yeah. But to answer those things in a vacuum,
right?
What if Hargraves resigned? Right. Then, you know, all those variables that aren't entirely in your control.
Right. What is the most likeliest position that, you know, it was, I think dollar for dollar and position, it was probably James Daniel last year, right?
In terms of their best signing?
Well, as far as their kind of their top.
Oh yeah, he was their big splash.
Their big splash.
By Pittsburgh standards, yes, right. Daniels was their big splash. Yeah.
All right. What position group is most likely to be the big splash when whatever it is, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12 million. What position group is most likely to be referred to a year from now as a saying, looking back and say that was the biggest splash they made?
Yeah, I mean, again, it just comes down to what's available, what's out there. I think trenches largely is how Weidel's going to build this team, Weidel and Omar Khan. And I think D-line's more likely than O-line right now. So I would still stick with that D-line answer. But if there's nothing out there, there's nothing out there. You can't make it happen if there's no free agent worth signing or nobody who wants to come here or whatever the case is for a million reasons why a deal might not get done. You could look towards, you know, a backup offensive lineman, a veteran swing guy makes sense, a veteran slot receiver makes sense. You know, those kinds of things I kind of expect are probably going to happen in free agency on smaller scales. I think D-line's the biggest need. We'll have the biggest splash, whether that's draft or free agency, but I can't guarantee that's going to come in free agency.
Could it be inside linebacker this time?
I mean, that gets back to, I mean, Tremaine Edmonds' name will be mentioned a million times this offseason. I think the way that Weidel wants to build this thing is inside out. And if you have a good inside linebacker, even pair, but a bad defensive line, then it's hard to maximize the value of that off-ball player. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not going to rule anything out. But I think trenches is where you'll see the biggest splash during the offseason, be it draft or free agency.
All right, one last one, Damian Hunt. Hey guys, enjoy the show. Would it be a smart move to trade up in the draft and take Jalen Carter at defensive tackle? He says the team has been lacking at that position for years now and is in need of one badly. I mean, I've obviously seen a lot of Jalen Carter. I haven't drilled down on him, but he's going to be one of the top defensive tackles in this class, obviously here. Mm-hmm. Will he be on the board at 17? Probably not. Would it be smart to trade up? I'll say this about the idea of trading up. I doubt the Steelers trade up in the first round this year.
Yeah, again, I hate to be this wishy-washy, but it's always hard to answer these questions. How far are you moving up? What's the cost? What's all, what else is on the board? What have you addressed in for agency? What have you lost? I mean, there's so many variables to make it so difficult. I agree that a trade-up is probably unlikely. Had this conversation last year with Jordan Davis out of Georgia, and Eagles ended up going up to get him. Pittsburgh takes their quarterback. So it's a, it seems like a pretty deep defensive line group. And Carter may not be the perfect prospect that some may think that he is. And so probably not going to happen there. But again, to answer those things so early in a vacuum like that, it's just really tough to do.
All right. Shall we end it there?
Yeah, we can wrap things up. Do want to note here on Monday, our draft profiles will start. Jonathan Hightritter will have one on an SEC player, a lineman. I won't give any more information than that, but our first 2023 NFL draft player profile will go up. I know you guys look forward to that, and we're certainly excited about that as well.
I think we've got another one already in can, maybe an offensive lineman as well, too, right? That you can throw alongside of it there?
SEC? Yeah, that may go up Monday or Tuesday. Yeah, there'll be an offensive lineman. So trench heavy to start our draft process.
All right. We were looking to hopefully maybe do 250 of those this offseason, God willing. So anyway, in the meantime, and we are also continuing the series that you guys started that I've got to fill mine out on. The
awards, yeah.
The awards, yeah, yeah. Those I think Matthew Marksies went up today, I think.
Or Josh is today.
Josh.
And then
today.
Jonathan, when do you put, you know, when you want to post yours?
when I get one in round two, it's.
All right. So next week.
Hopefully next week sometime. All right. Okay. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazara. Oh, Alex, fantastic article on DeMarvin Leal this morning. Pump that. Did we hit that early in the show or no?
No, we didn't talk about it today. We talked about it some, I guess, on Wednesday, but some of the ideas and things we've talked about on Twitter, you and I think on the podcast as well, just wrote it into an article called the DeMarvin Leal Dilemma in terms of what the team will do with him. What is he? Is he a defensive lineman, a hybrid guy? What is the best way to use him? I kind of outline how I personally would use him. And it's actually, frankly, basically how Pittsburgh used him this year. But I think him being moved into a full-time defensive line role, not the best thing for him, not the best thing for this defense.
Look, get by the site right now and read that. Follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kazara. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to, we got some all pros coming in here, Alex.
Okay.
AP All Pros, real quick. Minka Fitzpatrick, first team safety All Pro, second team All Pro. Any Steelers on here? Doesn't look
Cam,
like
no
it
Cam,
there.
No Cam.
Doesn't look like it there. Looks like Minka's the only one there. Email theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Donate, SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button. Also, if you want to get an ad-free, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button up right navigational bar. Have a great weekend, and as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.